ceiling part of this. Can you help?
Do I represent Milo?
I'll do it.
Where does he live?
Okay. When do I? What's my issue?
Madam Chair,
and his bill last year had a CPI. Okay, so he's gonna leave alone.
Is he?
Oh, so tell me, because I just came in. Moving this one.
5700
for
the
conservation.
Thank you.
Yeah, we're ready. Lock and load.
Lower state.
I could call the Senate Finance Committee back to order. It is 9:10. My understanding is that we were having some technical difficulties, and while we were at ease, we were being piped out to other areas of the Capitol, and while we were in session meeting, that did not get recorded. So for those listening, this is Senator Fairclough with me this morning since about 9:05. Senator Olson, Senator Hoffman, Senator Dunleavy, and Senator Bishop. We took up the CS for Senate Bill 22, version P, adopted that version, and then moved that version from committee. Is there any objections to what I've just stated for clarity on the record? The CS for SB 22 has been moved from committee. That is an act relating to crimes, victims, child abuse, and neglect. The next bill before us is SB 83. I'm looking for the sponsor. We do have a committee substitute, Senator Bishop.
Madam Chairman, I'd like to move CS for SB 8328 LS0634-U to be adopted by the Senate Finance Committee.
Is there any objections from committee members? Seeing none, the CS for Senate Bill 83, version U, has been adopted and before the committee. Christine, could you tell us the differences without the sponsor here?
For the record, again, my name is Christine Mercy and staff to Senator Kevin Meyer and the Senate Finance Committee. The difference between the version you had previously and the new CS version U is on line 11, we have the addition of an effective date that makes the tax retroactive.
Thank you, Christine. Welcome, Senator Michicki. We have adopted the CS for 83 and have been advised of the retroactivity clause. Could you speak to the bill itself?
Thank you, Senator Fairclough. Yes, Senate Bill 83, corporate income tax. Despite being about corporate income taxes, this bill is actually about fairness and simplicity. For both state and federal corporate income tax purposes, contractors undertaking large multi-year projects, such as highways, schools, universities, are required to estimate their total profit on a project and pay income tax on the portion of the project completed in a given year, given tax year. As you can imagine, it's impossible to predict in the first year of the project what the actual cost will be or profit will be. So on completion of the project and once the actual profit amount is determined, the contractor files what is considered look-back taxes, essentially an amended return. The contractor then either owes additional taxes or is due a refund based on whether the profit was under or overestimated. Interest is owed on the additional taxes due or the refund to be paid. Nothing I described so far will change in this bill. That's just how the system works. Here's where the legislation comes into play. Although the IRS code has a specific provision for over and under payments of estimated taxes for these multi-year projects, existing state laws consider these delinquent payments and applies an 11% interest rate. State makes no distinction between our system of estimating taxes based on a contractor's best knowledge and a taxpayer who does not make a timely filing at all. I believe there should be a distinction between a tax penalty on delinquent taxes and an amended return. Conversely, this bill ties the interest rate to a recognized index as opposed to the 11% interest currently being paid by both the state and by contractors in the current outdated system. I think we've seen several examples this year in the code that's somewhat outdated on what we're charging for interest rates. Senate Bill 83 corrects the interest issue, while it also simplifies the process for contractors. It adopts the Internal Revenue Bulletin rates for look-back taxes on long-term projects, allowing the contractor and the state to use the same interest pay schedules for state taxes as the federal system. For underpayments when the contractor underestimated the profit and overpayments when the state owes money in amounts of $10,000 or less, the current rate is around 2%. It actually is 2%. On amounts greater than $10,000, interest is currently levied at 0.5%. The rate fluctuates and it's published quarterly. The committee substitute simply specifies the tax policy bullet will be in effect for the 2013 calendar tax year. I believe you covered that just a moment ago. I believe it's a fairness issue. Legislation will primarily affect Alaska Sea Corporation contractors, lenders, surety bonding companies, and ultimately allows for greater cash flow that would be reinvested in Alaska's communities. We received several letters of support that you have before you. The letters are from general contractors, the Association of General Contractors, bankers, public accountants, surety or bonding brokers, essentially folks from the entire funding chain of sea contractor projects. I believe this bill is good for the state, for our private sector businesses, and ultimately for Alaskans. And we have John McKinnon, Kathy Duxbury, and Adana Piper Nelson here to testify and help answer any questions for the committee.
Thank you, Senator Michicki. Are there questions from committee members? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Marchicki, is there anybody that's against this bill?
I have yet to, including the Department of Revenue, I have yet to run into anyone that thinks modernizing our interest rates to something realistic is a bad thing.
And what's the administration's position on it?
I can't speak for the administration. My understanding is that Department of Revenue is in support.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Olson. With that, we do have people in the audience and possibly online that would like to testify on this bill. Senator Marchicki will take the public hearing and then move on. Here in Juneau, we have Idana, is it Nelson? Piper Nelson, if you'd come to the table, if you have a testimony that you'd like to provide the committee on this bill.
Good morning. My name's Idana Piper Nelson. I'm the CFO and a partner at Davis Constructors and Engineers Incorporated. We are one of the largest general contractors in the state of Alaska. I'm also a certified public accountant, and I understand the issues involved in this legislation. I'm here to speak in support of House Bill 83, and I really appreciate your hearing this bill and the opportunity to speak. Thank you very much. So I think one of the reasons this hasn't come to the forefront previously is that it's a confusing topic. We're talking about interest on a tax.
Back on the record. I apologize. We were getting a little bit of electronic feedback and wanted to make sure that we could hear your testimony.
Okay.
Please continue.
So back to where I was. It is an interest rate that we're referring to, and it's assessed on a tax that is difficult for many people to understand. And I'll be frank with you, when I called people that clearly have an interest in this legislation, many of them didn't even know they did. It's just something that their tax accountants prepare their taxes for them every year, and the amounts they owe are kind of lumped together. You owe taxes, you owe penalties, you owe interest. And the typical president of a contracting company might just look at that and think that's a lot of taxes and not realize there are individual components involved. So I'd like to help with the understanding of how that works and why. I think that Senator Marchicki did a very nice job of explaining, and I'll just expand a little bit. So in the contracting world, for what's considered to be a large contractor, and large in the eyes of the federal taxing authorities, is simply means that they bring in $10 million or more in revenue a year. So you don't have to be very big to fall under these rules. Most contractors will have revenues in that area or above. So it's broadly applied, and within that arena, the way it works is that a contractor, when you get a fixed fee job, you don't really know exactly how profitable it will be. We don't have a crystal ball. Of course we don't bid a job unless we think that it will make money, but as the project progresses, we reduce our risks, we buy out, we hire subcontractors, we find out exactly what it will cost to perform. And as the project nears completion, our estimate of our gross profit becomes more and more accurate, just like anybody. The more information you have, the more accurate that becomes. So typically, we start out with a very conservative estimate. If things go wrong, we are certain we can make this amount of money. And each year, we have to apply that current estimate to the amount of revenue that we have, and that's what we pay taxes on. So at the end of the project is when this comes into play. Now it's over with, we know how much we earned, and we now will pay taxes retroactively, looking back and saying, well, that first year I paid taxes on $50,000 that I thought I would earn, but if I went back and recalculated based on my actual and I would have now earned $100,000 for that year, the taxes are calculated based on that difference in income, and then an interest rate is applied. And the objective of this is just to make everyone whole. If a contractor is not, this is the most important part, I think, if a contractor is not conservative in the early years of their project at the beginning, they will lose the respect of their banker, their bonding company, their shareholders, and everybody involved in the project that sees their financial statements. It looks very poor to start out saying, I think I'm going to make $1 million, and end up making $500,000. Nobody can respect that. Because we're paying taxes and reporting income based on estimates, it is crucial that they're conservative estimates and that we show a gain on our projects by the end of them, not a loss. A good contractor will always have look-back taxes. An ethical contractor always pays every tax owed on time. We pay all of our taxes on time, and as soon as we know what the amounts are, we are never delinquent in our tax payments, and we pride ourselves in that. So it's fairly insulting to have a very high interest rate that's intended to deter people from making late tax payments applied to a situation where we have no control, where in fact we are just being good contractors. And by being good contractors, we're, you know, building all of these great projects for the state of Alaska. We're taking care of people. We're employing hundreds of people. We're contributing to our communities by making charitable contributions and participating in activities that support the communities that we work in. And if we had additional profits as a result of paying less interest on these look-back taxes, those amounts would flow right back through to making our business stronger and helping our communities in better ways. Let's see. So that was the, it's not a delinquent tax. It's just a tax we had no control over. So the federal government's income tax or rates that they charge on these look-back taxes are designed to recognize the fact that this is a factor out of our control. It is highly unusual for the federal government to allow anybody to pay interest to them that is the same rate that they would pay a taxpayer who had overpaid their taxes. In this case, that is the schedule the Internal Revenue Service has selected for this type of interest. They're recognizing that it's beyond our control and that in order to be good and ethical contractors, we will have this expense. And therefore, they allow us to pay the same interest rate that they would pay to us had we overpaid. It's an interesting and odd fact that if a contractor were unethical and not a very good business person construction-wise, they could technically make interest money from the state and the federal government by underestimating their, or excuse me, overestimating their ultimate profits. In that case, they wouldn't be making money from performing their work well. They'd be making money from the state and federal government through interest, and it just really wouldn't make any sense at all. So that's taking that to the opposite and strange extreme. Naturally, as an honest and ethical and good contractor, we've never been in that situation. We always end up owing.
Thank you for those comments, Aidana. Are there questions from committee members? Seeing them, we do have others that are waiting to testify. I'd fail to say that if we could limit our comments to three to 5 minutes, that would be helpful so that we can get through the public testimony. Thank you for those comments.
Thank you very much.
Is there anyone else here in Juneau wishing to testify on SB 83? Online, we have John McKinnon with AGC, Associated General Contractors. Mr. McKinnon, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members of the Senate Finance Committee, for allowing me to testify. I'm not sure I can add too much more to the very excellent explanation given by Senator Michiki and Ms. Piper Nelson, but I'd like to state a couple of things. For the record, this is John McKinnon, the Executive Director of the Associated General Contractors of Alaska, a construction industry trade association. Just to emphasize a couple of things that were stated in this bill brings the interest rate on these taxes in line, on these due taxes due in line with current rates, and keeps it that way. It fluctuates with the Fed rate that can change quarterly. It separates out the look-back provision and interest on those taxes from other sections of the code that are considered delinquent taxes. This is a taxes due as a result of an amended return, and in no way are they delinquent. And I believe it also helps level the playing field between construction contractors who are C-Corps, who choose to be C-Corps for valid business reasons, and who pay taxes, corporate income taxes to the state, and other construction business types, whether they're S-Corps or partnerships or LLPs. Anyway, Madam Chair, thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I can answer any questions if there are any.
Thank you, Mr. McKinnon. Are there questions from committee members? Seeing and hearing none, is there anyone else online wishing to testify on SB 83, interest on corporate income tax? Anyone else in the room? Seeing and hearing none, the public hearing is closed. I'd like to direct the committee's attention to the fiscal note. We're seeing general operating cost zero fiscal note, FY 14 through 2019. This fiscal note is from the Department of Revenue. It's allocated to the tax division. It's OMB component number 2476. As far as change in revenues, I will point you to page 2, where the department went through two different calendar years seeking to understand how many corporations would be exempt from this particular change and who would be under it. They estimate 50% of the ones that they looked through could qualify and 50% wouldn't, but gave us an indeterminate fiscal note on the change in revenues for the state of Alaska. Is there any other questions that we need to ask on the fiscal note? We do have Robin Wilson off net from the tax division that is available to assist the committee. Seeing and hearing none, Senator Bishop may have a motion.
Senator
Meyer.
Yes,
thank you.
I think I have the motion here. And first of all, I think this is an excellent bill. I appreciate the sponsor bringing that forward. Madam Chair, I move CS for SB 83 /U as an umbrella from the Senate Finance Committee with the attached fiscal note, zero fiscal note, and individual recommendations.
Any objections? Just for the record, Senator Meyer joined us. So I'm sure the clerks have made that notation. Seeing and hearing no objections, SB 83 is moved from committee. We'll take a brief at ease. Finance Committee is called back to order. It is 9:35. I did note for the record that Senator Meyer had joined us a bit ago. Welcome, Senator Meyer.
Thank you.
Next on the committee's agenda is CS for Senate Bill 57 from the Education Department. This is an act relating to parental involvement in education, adjusting pupil transportation funding, amending the time required for employers to give tenured teachers notification of their non-retention, and providing for an effective date. Do we have a sponsor's representative in the room?
Good morning. Thank you. For the record, my name is Tim Lackey, staff to Senator Stevens. Unfortunately, he was unable to join us this morning. He sends his regards and gratitude for hearing this bill. This bill on its surface is fairly straightforward. It does three important things. First and foremost, it addresses an effort at the state level for improved parental involvement. There are recognized to be three components to student success or assessing reading levels, and they start off with identification or assessments of students' reading abilities, and the second step being intervention, which include things like summer school or after-hour tutoring and so forth, and then the third back to actions can be retention policies, which are essentially to hold students back or keep them make them repeat a grade. Those are all policies that are recognized as to be done at the local level. This effort in this bill would have the state direct school districts to publish information about parental involvement and the importance of their children that are in K through third grade in improving their reading skills and being proficient at reading by the third grade. The second section of this bill involves pupil transportation. Currently, as passed last year, there's a 1.5% adjustment annually for pupil transportation contracts. The way the market works is school districts contract with vendors, and there's a 3% or CPI inflationary adjustment at these contracts. And so if the state does not help contribute to that funds, then they coming out of the general fund of these school districts and essentially coming out of the classrooms. So as was passed last year, as you, some of you may recall, unanimously in the Senate, they passed a 3% adjustment. Essentially 3% is the consumer price index for Anchorage. That at the somewhat at the 11th hour was struck to 1.5% effective for 2 years. So that will, it currently is 1.5%, but would go away in a couple of years from now. The section three there is commonly referred to as the pink slip section, whereas for many, many years, in fact, in my research, it goes back to 1949 when they first established this notification of March 16th, and 1966 they revamped the entire education codes. But there's no real known reason why they established March 16th. It was an arbitrary date. And in the meantime, since then, our budgetary process is such that school districts don't often know what their funds are going to be by March 16th. So this would push that date forward so that everyone knows how much money is coming into the system and they can budget and plan accordingly. Section 4 then would repeal the existing pupil transportation section that was set up last year. Section 5 is applicability language to allow existing contracts with teacher and faculty to expire before the new May 15th would take effect. That, Mr. Chairman, is a general summary of what the bill. We have some experts in the back here to talk about details.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Why would we use just Anchorage as the base? You know, I think in Fairbanks, the costs are much higher, and they have a lot of buses as well. Is there a special consumer price index for Fairbanks and for those that are in much higher cost areas?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, that is a it is a policy call. There are other indexes that could be used. I believe in the past that historically we've used Anchorage because it's the largest metropolitan area as a base.
But I think for fairness to the, especially to larger areas like Fairbanks, possibly could consider a higher index for Fairbanks and anyone that has a higher index than Fairbanks.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Senator Bishop.
Do we have information on what's the differences between the CPI in Anchorage and Fairbanks?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, I don't have that on hand, but I can certainly get that for you.
I'd appreciate that. Thank you.
Any other questions from committee members from the sponsor or to the sponsor? Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Section 3, where we're talking about the laid off notice, does that only apply to tenured teachers, or would that be to all teachers? Because I think, don't you have to have been there 3 years before you're tenured, or five? I forget what the number is.
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, currently it's 3 years to set tenure. Section 3 would only apply to tenured teachers. Subsection B of that statute refers to non-tenured teachers that have until the end of the school year to be notified.
Senator Meyer, follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Why did we do it that way? I guess. I mean, don't we want to notify all the teachers that are potentially, going to be pink slipped at the same time? Maybe I'm missing something here.
Tim.
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, that is a policy discussion. As I mentioned earlier, this March 15th and who is notified when has been on the books for many, many decades. That was a policy negotiated over the years, and it could certainly be changed.
Senator Meyer?
I'm good. Thank you.
It might be fair to say that someone who has acquired tenure and was going to be I want to say a victim, and that sounds, but if they were going to be laid off, that we would want to provide as much time as possible because they would be more secure in their job than somebody who was just hired. I would think that might be the conversation, but it is a policy call that's before us. Senator Olson, did you have a question?
No, I was just wondering if somebody's notified on March 16th, they'd have a lot more time to look for another job if they were going to get pink slip versus May 15th.
Senator Olson, I think that's the crux of it, but then we've heard from school districts that say because of the funding cycle at the state of Alaska that we issue pink slips prior to school districts knowing securely what their funding will be for the following year. I don't want to speak on behalf of the sponsor. Tim, do you have a...
Thank you, Madam Chair. That puts it fairly concisely. If we use a current example, our budget is not even passed right now, so technically pink slips have already been issued or could have been, creating angst and anxiety in the classrooms when, in fact, it's really not necessary. It's kind of an inefficiency and unfairness. So that's what this change is attempting to do, is make it fair and transparent for everyone.
Senator Olson, anything else?
No, thank you.
Senator Dunleavy.
Just through the chair, a lot of things appear to be done backwards from a school district's point of view. You're trying to plan for next year, but you're compelled by law in March to hand out contracts, not knowing what your money is going to be from your local contribution, your borough, or your city government school, and you don't know what's coming from the legislature till later. So you're compelled to lock in contracts before you even know what your budget's going to be. So this kind of lines it more along the lines of the budgetary considerations.
Thank you, Senator Dunleavy. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just for the sponsor, I'll have to say that Section 2, the indexing, I have heard comments on that section. And you're absolutely right. Last year when I brought this bill forward, we had indexing in there. And by golly, that was a good bill. and it's still a good bill. I've been told that we typically don't index to CPI on just about anything we do. So this may be setting a precedent that we may want to think about, although I also understand that if we don't do this, then you'd be here, or somebody would be here every year or every 2 years asking for more money for pupil transportation. So I guess I just have to let you know, I've heard both sides of Section 2. I guess my preference, obviously, is to have the indexing, but I do know there is some concern in that section, and I don't know if that's come up in the Education Committee or other committees that this bill has been in. I guess it's just education.
Thank you, Senator Meyer. Is there a sponsor response?
And through the chair and follow-up, Senator Meyer, that is a policy question. It did come up in Senate Education, but most of the focus was on the other non-monetary policy issues of the bill. We left that purposefully for finance to take up. I want to reiterate that this, my understanding anyway, is a market reality. If we don't fund it, it's still going to, there is a cost there that's real. But we have the business officials from the school districts that work closely on this issue that I would really like to defer to.
Any other questions from committee members? With that, I'd like to move to a public hearing. Senator Hoffman.
Just a comment to Senator Meyer. In this particular case, if it isn't indexed, the additional dollars that would have to be taken out of the school's budget will diminish the amount of money going to the classroom, and I think that is the crux of the argument that we're talking about.
Thank you. We will have an opportunity to discuss the bill in a little bit. If we could move with your support to the public hearing portion. With that, is there anyone here in Juneau wishing to testify on SB 57? Amy, is it Lujan?
Lujan,
thank you.
Good morning, Senators. My name is Amy Lujan, and I'm with the Alaska Association of School Business Officials. So the members of our association are working with the budgets and the people transportation contracts and all of those things that are represented in Sections 2 and 3 of this bill. So When Senate Bill 182 was proposed last year, our organization had a role in formulating that bill and working with Senator Meyer and the other sponsors. And with regard to the Consumer Price Index, I do know that there are standardized contracts that were recommended a few years back by the Department of Ed, and they include the Anchorage CPI. So even the Fairbanks contract, I believe, has Anchorage CPI built in. I know the Nome contract did when I worked out there, and that was sort of recommended as a standard at that time, because as has been referenced, those costs are real, and it was just used as the best proxy for how we could put an escalator into our contracts. So I believe all the contracts are fairly standard with that Anchorage CPI. As Senator Meyer and Senator Hoffman referenced, they are real costs that are going up. And so if this bill or if the funding mechanism does not keep pace with those real costs, we are seeing a situation where money's coming out of the classroom. So that's why we're very interested in getting that aligned to what the actual contracts say, which is the Anchorage CPI escalator. And then with regard to Section 3, I would just echo what Senator Dunleavy said about, you know, the funding system being sort of out of whack date-wise, because most school districts don't find out what they're getting from their boroughs until May 1. So, you know, there's the legislative cycle, which typically ends in mid-April, and then there's the system with the boroughs that ends in early May. And so to be issuing these pink slips in March, it gets very stressful for people. Perhaps unnecessarily, if this date could be moved back so that people would have a firm understanding of what their situation was with regard to employment. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there questions from committee members?
If you do.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Ms. Lujan, as we're looking at, you talked about the CPI that's between there and Anchorage, and at least you're going by some type of guideline, realizing that Anchorage probably has the cheapest energy costs and costs that go along with transportation. Wouldn't it be fair to use a CPI out of Fairbanks or someplace else that has a much more corresponding to what it would cost out in other places that are providing transportation?
Mm-hmm. Well, through the chair, Senator Olson, I would say that might be fair for the contractors, but as it is, the contracts currently have Anchorage CPI in them. So everybody has kind of agreed to that system at this point in time. So that would work.
To that,
no, we would be happy with the Anchorage CPI, yes, at this point.
Last question, Madam Chairman.
Senator Olson.
Has to do with you talked about Senator Dunleavy's position on going from March 16th to May 15th, and you talked about the boroughs. I realize that most of the places in Alaska are within the unorganized borough. Mm-hmm. Why not moving the date to May 1st, which corresponds with the borough type date, that so that the schools have one deadline that they have to deal with?
Mm-hmm. Well, through the chair, Senator Olson, I know that different local ordinances have different arrangements with their cities as well as boroughs. For example, City of Nome, you know, we would get our budget to the city May 1, and so then they still had some more time to figure out their contribution. So it probably does vary a little bit. I think May 15th might be a safer date covering that variance.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Thank you for your testimony. Next, OffNet. I have two people from the Matsu School District, Luke Phillip and Dina Paramano. Luke, are you there?
Yes, Madam Chair. This is Dina Paramo. I'm the superintendent for the Matsu Borough School District. I want to thank the Senate Finance Committee for allowing me to provide testimony on behalf of Senate Bill 57. First, on the parent involvement piece, the Matsu Borough School District understands and supports the need to have parents involved early on in their child's educational experiences. Parents are the first and foremost important teacher in a student's lives, and while they, not only prior to, but while they're in our schools. So having tools and resources made available to parents will only enrich the activities that take place in our schools, and we are supportive of the changes that were made to have school districts direct those. Please know on this next part, I'd like to start by stating that busing contracts in the state of Alaska are based on the CPIU, as this is the only measured area in the state by the U.S. Department of Labor Statistics. There are 40 across the country, but the only one in Alaska is Anchorage, and all contracts are related back to that. Each year when school districts sit down to develop their budgets for the upcoming year, we employ global big picture thinking, but we also temper that thinking with the accounting reality of analyzing total revenues as compared to total expenses and the marginal differences that exist in each of these two categories from one year to the next. With pupil transportation, we don't believe the current factor of 1.5%, as identified within SB 182 from last session, will provide the commensurate increase in revenue necessary to fully support transportation in our district or any other district around the state. The reason why we hold this belief is based on a five-year average of the Anchorage CPIU. To provide some historical perspective, if we were to average the last 5 years of the Anchorage CPIU increases, we come up with an average of 2.6. When compared to the 1.5 rate, districts are then assuming an increase of just over 1% for pupil transportation services. This funding shortfall then reduces the amount of instructional dollars, as mentioned in your committee, that can be spent in the classroom. Using language from SB 182, MATSU is preparing to subsidize transportation operations by using its general fund by approximately $1.5 million for fiscal year 2014, which is next year. This, in turn, will impact our ability to fund instruction and instructional programs and pay for teaching positions. In fact, a $1.5 million shortfall is the equivalent of 15 teaching positions that would need to be reduced from our general operating budget. While Senate Bill 57 will only erase the shortfall, will not erase the shortfall in its entirety, it will serve to reduce the deficit by approximately $500,000. Lastly, I will briefly address the notice of non-retention. As the state has moved away from the multi-year funding model enacted in 2008 under House Bill 273, a new year-to-year funding structure has taken effect. Under this structure, school districts are not fully aware of their revenue until the legislature and local assembly have appropriated funds. Meanwhile, districts are held to a statutory timeline in which they must renew and issue contracts for tenured staff well before revenue is known for the upcoming fiscal year, both at the state level and local level. Currently, a school district must either issue tenured contracts or institute a reduction in force, commonly known as the RIF, by March 16th of each year. This is an entire month before the legislature adjourns and often 2 months prior to our local appropriation being known. MATSU Borough School District does not feel that this timeline is conducive to prudent and responsible fiscal policy at the district level. Extending the RIF date to May 15th would allow MATSU Borough School District and all school districts in the state of Alaska to be better stewards of public funds by not entering into contracts until funding for the upcoming school year is known. Again, I want to thank the Senate Finance Committee for hearing testimony on this bill and giving public education funding due consideration. Thank you so very much. And Luke Volp is here just in case there's any questions. He is the Chief Business Officer for the MATSU Borough School District. Thank you.
Thank you, Dina. Are there questions from committee members?
Madam Chair.
Senator Hoffman.
Yes, I was looking at the fiscal note for MATSU, and the testimony was that it would cost additional $1 million, but in the fiscal note here it says that the increment would be about $300,000. And I'm wondering how MATSU came up with that figure of $1 million.
Committee members, I believe Senator Hoffman has fiscal note number 2. Is that correct, Senator Hoffman?
Yes, I do.
Thank you. So that is for the Department of Education. The allocation is pupil transportation. It's the third page in. Ms. Permelo, did you hear the question?
Yes, Madam Chair. And Luke Fulp, as it is a detailed question, Luke Fulp, Chief Business Officer, will respond. Thank you.
Mr.
Yes, thank you. Through the chair, the answers to that question, one is I don't know exactly how the fiscal note was calculated and what was provided in terms of the Anchorage CPIU. What we developed our budget off of was that five-year average because when we developed the budget, we were unaware of the new rate that came out recently, which is 2.2%, so the fiscal note could represent that. But as you heard Dr. Promo mention, we were estimating that it will reduce our funding by not $1.5 million, but it will reduce our deficit by roughly $500,000. But that was contingent on the 2.6% average in relation to the 1.5% increase that we knew we would get through Senate Bill 182.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you for those comments. Any other questions from committee members? Thank you for those follow-up comments, Mr. Fulp. We'll move on. Dave Jones from Kenai. Dave, are you online?
Yes, Madam Chairman. My name is Dave Jones. I'm the Assistant Superintendent for the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District, and I would like to thank you and your fellow senators for the opportunity to testify on behalf of Senate Bill 57 this morning. I had a canned statement, but the folks talking before me, I think, have had addressed the areas. So I'm going to try and highlight the areas, I think, to help some of the questions that came. When we look at the inclusion of the CPI, the anchored CPI in the contracts, that came a number of years ago when the department was attempting to hold the cost down of transportation across the state, and in one of those efforts was to standardize the contracts across the state in the hopes that we could attract additional vendors. And part of that standardization was the inclusion of an annual CPI increase based on the Anchorage CPI, because as was stated earlier, there is only one CPI for the state. So if the language in this bill would be changed to the Anchorage CPIU, all of the places, including Fairbanks, would have their costs covered because that's what their contract with their current vendor states. We want to say that we want to thank the Senate for funding SB 182 last year. Covered the cost that we were currently subsidizing out of the general fund, and that's why we would like to see the change in this bill so we don't continue into the future needing to pull money out of the general fund to pay for the transportation that our contracts currently have. And on the third section with the non-tenured, move of the tenure date to May 15th, it's been stated probably more succinctly than I'll say it, but we do not know on March 15th what our financial situation is, because we do have unknowns at the borough level and at the state level. With the change to May 15th, it gives us the ability to, in the years when we don't know what our financial situation is to wait till May 15th to do that, and then that does cause less confusion and unrest and that within our district, because we don't have to notify on March 15th that we're going to lay you off. Because usually what comes with those notices is we're going to lay you off, but we're hoping that by the time we get our funding, we'll be able to hire you back. And what that does then is put teachers in the position of where they're saying, well, I'm not sure I have a job. I better start looking. And so within that time period, when we do find out what our funding is, we come back to them and say, good news, we're going to rehire you. And they say, bad news, I now work for another district or in another state. And so with this move, it allows us to not have to lay people off and give them that notice until May 15th. In the years where we know where our funding is at, we issue those contracts as soon as we can. So to close, I want to say that the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District supports all three of the sections of this bill, and I would be willing to answer any questions if we had it. And again, thank you for the support of education that you have historically been giving us.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Are there questions from committee members? Senator Dunleavy.
Through the chair, it's just more of a comment. The May 15th, really, when you think about it, is it could be a minimum, because if we run into special sessions, et cetera, and decisions aren't made, we're still in a bind, but it's better than it was before. Some would probably advocate even for June 1st, but that's an issue for a different time, I guess.
Thank you, Mr. Dunleavy. Thank you, Mr. Jones. There are no other questions from committee members.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else online wishing to testify on SB 57? Is there anyone else here in Juneau? wishing to testify on SB 57, if you'd state your name for the record and any affiliation.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Bruce Johnson, the Executive Director for the Alaska Council of School Administrators. And I just want to reinforce what Dave Jones just said from Kenai. Districts don't take laying off teachers or any employees kind of in a willy-nilly sort of way. Rural districts historically issue contracts to their staff that they want to have returned in February so that they can then begin to think about where they, especially where they have huge turnover, the need for who we going to have to hire and what is our recruitment strategy going to be. We have a job fair in Alaska that starts in April where a lot of our new teachers and people are hired at that point. So we take this very seriously, and just because we have a date and we obviously like the flexibility that comes with this legislation, but at the same time, most of our teachers, particularly our tenure teachers, will have contracts issued well in advance of this date so that we don't force them into that situation that Mr. Jones just talked about, that they begin to look for another job. They got a family to feed, they want to work, those sorts of things. So I think we're very sensitive, and it's to our advantage as school districts to have a stable employment force. So thank you.
Are there questions from committee members? Thank you for joining us, Mr. Johnston. Anyone else here in Juneau wishing to testify on SB 57? Anyone off net? Seeing and hearing none, the public hearing is closed on SB 57. With that, I would ask committee members over the course of the next few days to review the fiscal notes. There is a proposal to add some operating cost dollars as well as some capital dollars in the future. With that, I'll set aside SB 57 and provide some direction on where the co-chairmen are wishing to take us in the next few days and next week. First, tomorrow we'll begin hearing SB 49, Medicaid payments for abortions. We will be getting a bill overview in the morning. We may recess and come back in the afternoon for invited testimony and then take public testimony on Saturday afternoon, again on SB 49. Members should keep in mind that next week we'll be working on the capital budget in addition to listening to to legislation. Please expect morning and afternoon and sometimes evening meetings. On Monday, anticipate public testimony on the capital budget. Do committee members have anything else they'd like to bring before the committee? Thank you, everyone, for attending today. With that, it is 10:05, and we're adjourned.